Today, we review the president's wild weekend of sports. The war of words between KJU and Donald Trump. Will it kill us all? Probably. And Taylor Ortega looks into Hollywood's weird habit of making pedophile teachers preying on high school students seem sexy. Why America's ill-prepared for everything? And more on today's Factor. Hello, the internet, and welcome to the Daily Zeitgeist. It's Monday, September 25th. I'm Jack O'Brien. That is my co-host, Miles.
What a weekend.
And before we get to our guest, Allison Zeidman, what a weekend. It was a weekend of sporting events, I guess you could say.
A lot of sport.
Yeah, a lot of sport. Starting on Friday night, the president was down in Alabama, stumping for, what's the dude's name? Luther Strange?
Luther Strange.
It sounds like a member of Two Live Crew. He was stumping for him and, going off prompter as he is wont to do.
Doing jazz. Trump jazz.
Trump jazz. I think mainly because he can't read. He hates teleprompters. And, so he was just doing his riffing and, got on the subject. I don't think by accident. People seem to be suggesting that it was by accident. I think he, has a sort of ineffable ability to zero in on whatever is pissing off his base of, racist white people. And he landed on the subject of NFL players kneeling during the national anthem, which had been a thing, obviously Kaepernick started it last season. There's a lot of controversy surrounding it. He was blackballed in the offseason to show solidarity. A bunch of players were kneeling during the national anthems thus far for the first 2 weeks of this season. But as a story, it had sort of been petering out. I feel like it wasn't really growing. If anything, it was dying out. And then the Don chose to riff his Trump jazz all over it. And we're just going to play a small excerpt from one of the more subtle moments.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, out, he's fired. He's fired!
Wow. I mean, also, dude, it's interesting to think of that comment, too, in the context of him about to take another L on Obamacare.
Right.
So, he was already probably feeling some kind of way at that rally, and then he's like, let me just get some other shit out that I know you guys are fucking not liking.
Right.
It's interesting that, in the past couple of weeks, a lot of people in sports have found their way into his crosshairs, whether it's the NFL or Steph Curry or sportscasters at ESPN. It seems like if you're a person of color with any kind of opinion right now, you're going to get Trump.
Yeah, those are all people of color. That's weird.
Sports, when you think of the NFL, about nearly 70% black,
right,
in terms of the players, the NBA, not majority white sport. So, but then he'll big up NASCAR in another tweet, who's like, oh, NASCAR, good people at NASCAR, which is conversely the whitest sport in the country. And I think only recently they only had their first black driver since 2006.
Right.
But yeah.
Wait, what did he say about NASCAR?
He first, after talking about, the NFL is showing such disrespect to the flag and the national anthem, which this is not about, P.S. He goes on to give NASCAR some head and say, hey, so proud of NASCAR and its supporters and fans. They won't put up with disrespecting our country and our flag. They said it loud and clear.
Huh.
This is the sport where it's cool to fly a Confederate flag.
Right.
P.S. So,
right.
I think we're starting to see what this is really about.
Right. Yeah. So just following the weekend, just in general, we now have it that Trump is cool with NASCAR, and the only team that is willing to visit the White House are a hockey team. Which,
exactly.
What do those two sports have in common?
Very, very white.
Right.
Very white sports.
He's also a fan of lacrosse and
right. And golf.
Right. I didn't think that the protest of of the flag, which is not what it's about. Like you said, the New York NYPD sergeant named Edwin Raymond tweeted, "Thinking NFL players are protesting the flag is like thinking Rosa Parks was protesting public transportation."
That's funny. That's like, that was one of the most well-worn metaphors this weekend.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's pretty good.
No, it's, we were talking about this earlier. Is it because Trump really thinks this isn't about racial issues? And he's so sort of like, you know, in denial about what the state of race relations are, or just the state of like systemic racism in the country, that that's the only way he can compute what this is about.
Right. As he was boarding his helicopter yesterday, he said, he told, I think, MSNBC, this has nothing to do with race. So he honestly believes that his supporters think that any sort of racial connotations to the positions that he takes are completely trumped up. There's this meme going around that's a collage of pictures of Donald Trump shaking hands with various black celebrities, and it says, "Before Donald Trump ran for president, he was never accused of racism," which is a complete lie.
Yo, and like, Don King is so problematic. Like, right? don't act like that's your in. Like, you weren't shaking. You weren't like trying to get like wearing a free Mumia T-shirt or some shit.
Right. He was the pictures are of him shaking hands with Don King and I think Omarosa and, you know, the picture of racial blindness. But yeah, obviously he was famous during the 80s. The one sort of event that he really leapt on and took a political stance on was when a white woman was attacked in Central Park. I think five black teenagers were accused and I think convicted of the crime before DNA evidence exonerated them. But Trump came out strongly saying, he took out a ad that said, "Bring the death penalty back," you know, suggesting that we kill these wrongly accused black teenagers. And then, by the way, when that issue was brought up during the election, he came out and was like, "I stand by it." Somehow
double down.
Just I guess have them executed for being wrongly.
Well, yeah, and also accused. Like Trump like fails to see like that, like by definition, like it's, you're gonna have trouble trying to divide a sports team too, like by being like, oh, like I don't know what he expected from the teams, because you know, you have to inherently work together to achieve your shared goal of victory. So I don't know, like it seemed like, I don't know if he thought he was going to really inspire other people like in locker rooms to maybe try and get like their teammates on board. I guess like it's another one of those things where it's so wacky to me. I'm failing to understand what the actual strategy was here. If there was a strategy, or if this was just a crazy guy venting, because everyone just, he really just united everybody. Like I read a tweet that was like, he managed to like unite Cavs and Warriors Twitter with each other, which is
really, I guess, amazing. We should talk about that. That Steph Curry. So as you mentioned, Steph Curry had been saying in the past weeks that he wasn't sure if he wanted to visit the White House.
Right.
You know, with his Warriors, the champions, one of the most iconic teams in NBA history. Won the championship in the NBA. They obviously are expected to visit the White House. He was saying he didn't know if he wanted to. He was asked about it again on Friday. He said he still wasn't sure he wanted to because he would rather draw attention to some of the social issues in the country. And then Trump, you know, after coming out against black NFL players who were kneeling during the national anthem, then on Saturday morning caught wind of this. And there's a screen cap where you see like that there was a headline on Fox and Friends talking about how Steph Curry had brought up that he might not want to go to the White House. And then 20 minutes later, Trump tweeted this.
Yeah, he goes, "Going to the White House is considered a great honor for a championship team. Stephen Curry is hesitating. Therefore, invitation is withdrawn."
Right.
"I'm going to dump you before you can dump me."
Right. Yeah.
Like, wow.
"Can't fire me. I can't quit. You're fired." Yeah. And actually, LeBron James came back with
the greatest clapback of all time.
Yeah, it, like first he said what everybody already knew. He was like he already said he didn't want to go. You can't disinvite him, idiot. And then he called him you bum, which is just a great sort of old school insult. But then he said going to the White House was an honor until you showed up, which was really, really well put and kind of a sick burn. And Trump somehow managed not to.
Yeah, I think that was cutting, you know, that's right. Like, that was the LeBron. Like he's been called a dotard. He's been called a bum.
Right.
He's not having a great week on Twitter.
Right.
Or just in general. I mean, but I think we're saying that about the president every fucking week.
Right.
But yeah. And then pretty much after like all that, between that and then the NFL, a lot of people just came out and, you know, in a unified voice. I mean, there were a lot of people kneeling on the games yesterday. One of my favorites was seeing, you know, legendary asshole Ray Lewis taking two knees with the Ravens on the sideline. This is the same guy who went to meet with Trump, who told the Ravens not to sign Colin Kaepernick, who, you know, I'm pretty sure he murdered somebody too, taking two knees on the sideline, acting like, you know, he didn't even say, I mean, he even like talked against Black Lives Matter. So, you know, Ray Lewis, you can do your good, nice try, but, we see you.
Right. And NFL owners even came out, which NFL owners have been like very widely, like Bob Kraft, the guy who fucking
gave him a Super Bowl ring.
Right. Has been a big Trump supporter. Rex Ryan, the coach who had like invited him on stage and, you know, introduced him at a rally during the presidential election. Everybody was coming out being like, yo, fuck this guy. Like, I don't know.
This isn't good. Yeah. Even Tom Brady, who's like a big, was a pretty, you know, vocal Trump supporter. He was even like, yeah, I don't know about these comments. Like Tom Brady's like, I believe in love and unity.
Right. I mean, he supported his teammates in the most bland possible way.
That's true. Cause I mean, it's end of the day, like, you've got to throw your ball to somebody who's going to have to catch it. So,
right. Yeah. The owners can, you know, support their players all they want in words. I still want to see one of them, you know, bring Colin Kaepernick on. He is better than, I'd say, over 50% of the quarterbacks, like demonstrably better than over 50% of the quarterbacks they have on rosters. That's when they will actually demonstrate that they are for freedom of speech. I think in this case, they just realized they sort of jumped on and surfed the wave of public opinion. By the way, the WNBA, there's a tweet going around right now of WNBA players taking a knee, so that they're also protesting.
Who was it? Someone on the A's yesterday took a knee too. And so that's the first guy in baseball.
A rookie catcher who, again, it's never the players who have
deals
and have like nothing to lose. And it's always people who have a ton to lose and, you know, or as demonstrated by Kaepernick, you know?
Well, and it's a shame too. I mean, because, you know, many times people have likened the NFL to, and this might be snowflakes, watch out. They call it high paid slavery.
Yes.
When you think about, you know, it profits off of black bodies basically wearing themselves down and not looking after them after they retire. And within that metaphor, like, they're making an example of Colin Kaepernick in front of everybody else saying, you get out of line and this is what's going to happen. And you were saying something interesting. Like, I think he's in a doubly like tough spot too, because he's also a black quarterback.
Black quarterbacks are sort of one of the most underrated racial sort of hot points. You know, when you interview black quarterbacks, Warren Moon, one of the best quarterbacks in the history of the league, has had to start a support group for black quarterbacks because it's so difficult to be a black quarterback because you get hate mail, you get death threats because, and this is why, this is so controversial to have black players kneeling during national anthem in the NFL in particular, is because it's all about sort of a symbolic encoding of the very specific racial hierarchy that these players are protesting in the first place.
Right.
And when you have a black quarterback, it upsets that hierarchy because the thing that these people who don't realize that they're racist, who are racist, love about the NFL is that you have the white quarterback who sits back and is like smart and like picks apart the defense. And he has these like weapons, as they're called by NFL commentators, who are, you know, black speedy athletes who he like tells where to go and everything.
Juxtapose that with the NBA, right? There's no fucking support group for white point guards. You know what I mean? Like
right.
Jason Williams, everybody loved him. Like,
right.
Even, and he wasn't a great point guard, but he played with style, but nobody was hating on him because he was like in a traditionally black position.
Right.
I mean, let's be real. I think every position in the NBA is traditionally black, but
right.
like, yeah, there was no hate on that side. So, you know, choose your sports wisely.
Right. Right. Yeah, it was interesting because there were a couple ways that people were protesting, right? You had the people who were kneeling. You had the teams that weren't even coming out.
Right.
Tomlin specifically, the Pittsburgh coach, said he was doing it to avoid the conversation. But three separate teams decided not to come out for the national anthem. There were other people who were just locking arms with their teammates rather than, you know, whatever they normally
yeah,
do.
Yeah, having like a kneeling section and a standing section. They're like, okay,
right.
we're all together. We're all together.
And that tended to be how white players like Tom Brady showed that they were, you know, standing in solidarity with the Kaepernicks of the world.
Right. Or keeping their head down. You know,
right.
That was the other thing, too.
Right. And it, weirdly, the way that white players chose to protest the locking of the arms, that was the one form of protest that Trump just came to be out and be like, yeah, no, those guys are with me.
Right.
They are not protesting. That's how they show that they're Trump supporters.
Yeah, they're in solidarity with the people who respect the flag.
Right, right. So just to recap, Trump doesn't like the players who are kneeling, who happen to all be black players. Likes the ones who are locking arms, happen to all be white players. He is cool now only with NASCAR and NHL hockey, but it's not a race thing.
No.
Yeah, so I think Trump is totally making sense on this one. That's going to be it for just our weekend in review. We're going to be right back with Allison Zeidman. Hello, the internet, and welcome to this Monday edition of the Daily Zeitgeist. My name is Jack O'Brien. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Miles Gray.
Wagwan, internet.
And we are joined today in studio by Allison Zeidman.
Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you guys? Thanks for having
great.
Me.
We're great. Allison is a writer for Adam Ruins Everything, and most importantly, a writer for the Daily Zeitgeist.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Which, yeah, that's a prestigious role. We'll maybe talk about how you got that, but
how you got your start there.
How you got your start there. I mean, that's,
it's a real up for my bootstraps kind of story,
right.
Real inspiring American dream type stuff.
But real quick,
Five Goes West type stuff.
Yeah,
there are no cats in America,
right? That's the new Horatio Alger.
That's the most inspiring American story that I can think of off the top of my head. Five Goes West.
But real quick, we want to run through what's going on in the news right now. Currently dominating some headlines is the war of words between KJU, as the kids call him, and Donald Trump, Kim Jong-un. Allison, you said you were reading an article where a defector from North Korea was saying that...
Not a defector.
Just
a senior fellow at Yale Law School. She's a North Korea analyst. And she, along with like a lot of other analysts that are tracking North Korea, the situation there, their opinion is that Kim Jong-un, he's not a maniacal, evil, crazy, unpredictable type guy. It's like, yeah, he's, in his mind, he's building up this nuclear arsenal to keep his regime going and keep his country safe. He's not going to act irrationally. You know, deterrence can still work as a strategy with North Korea. So they're not so much worried about him, but now they're starting to get very worried about the kinds of things that they're hearing out of the White House and the attitudes of the administration. So General McMaster has long kind of said that Kim Jong is just this like crazy madman and we have to be preemptive about it and kind of on guard and, you know, ready to strike first if we need to. And with the language that Trump used the other day, where he called him a rocket man, is apparently what's particularly troubling to this analyst, Myra Rapp Hooper, because she's saying it seems to her as if he's coming around to this type of view of like, oh, this guy's crazy and unpredictable, and like, we got to do something before he does, instead of kind of trying to maintain the status quo where right. we're all just like, okay, right. We're going to call each other some names, but we'll just chill out. But yeah, they're starting to get very worried, and it's just interesting that it's like the little hint of that in the language of his speech is what's the most alarming to analysts.
Right. It's like he's becoming a unstable cartoon character in Donald Trump's version of the world.
Right, which... right.
Is, yeah, that's not good.
Well, yeah, because over here, the media just loves to paint Kim Jong-un, Masterpiece favorite dictator, like as, yeah, this crazy guy, rather than like every person who specializes in like Asian policy and things like that are like, no, his whole worldview and everything that motivates him is built around maintaining the status quo for
right.
him.
He sees it like, as like a survival thing.
Yeah, and it's not like, not because I'm trying to kill everybody. It's just like I need something in my pocket in case people try and remove me from power.
Right.
Right. He saw what happened to Gaddafi and he's like, yeah, I mean, that dude was building a arsenal against, you know, the UN's wishes. He was still showing up to the UN with young women with machine guns, but he was disobeying their orders and, you know, building a nuclear arsenal. And then at a certain point, he capitulated and was like, all right, I'll stop building the nukes. And he was immediately overthrown.
But wasn't that because like Reagan bombed the shit out of him? Like when he started to come around? Because like didn't they have like a little back and forth that eventually like escalated with us striking like a lot of like those facilities?
I don't know. But I just know that that is the what's being used by North Koreans as like the
right.
explanation for his reason for wanting nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. It's not like he's in a race to build nuclear weapons so he can blow up America and, you know, end the world. He's getting them because he feels like it's the only way to ensure that he won't be invaded and
right.
taken out.
Yeah, right. The more that our policy is to, you know, to see him as like suicidal, like this crazy maniac that we can't predict, the worst things are going to get, basically.
Right, right.
And I was reading another thing, too, is like in North Korea, like they don't actually, through their news channels to the people, don't report that Trump is calling him Rocket Man quite mm-hmm. yet. And they're saying some of that has to do with like, A, because they would never want to portray Kim Jong-un as being like ridiculed in other places in the world. But they were saying that they could somehow spin the Rocket Man thing into saying like, oh, that's just the West, you know, verifying that like our nuclear program is second to none and advancing at a quite rapid rate. So it's interesting to see like how there are so many sort of variables to this whole thing.
Yeah. Also, if somebody called me Rocket Man, I would definitely like tell everybody. I'd be like, yeah, I'm Rocket Man.
Well,
yeah.
What's funny, too, is like Kim Jong-un took like real shots at Donald Trump yesterday. What was the line?
Dotard. Yeah. A mentally deranged U.S. dotard.
Yeah.
That's like, in response to Rocket. I was reading this this Washington Post article that was like tracking, you know, North Korean insults throughout history. And like leaders of North Korea have a long, colorful history of beautiful, like Shakespearean level, like insults.
Right.
When Lyndon Johnson was president, the North Korea's major general called him a war maniac and a living corpse, which is just, it's just so insulting.
Dude,
and so funny.
They got next. See, that's not fair. Like they have ghostwriters. You
right,
know what I mean?
Right.
For this,
right.
like, I don't know, Kim Jong-un's being
they
like,
they sit around like their war room doing punch up on
yeah,
the
like,
insults.
Yeah. They're like, okay. So he said, we got to clap back. What do we got? And like,
right.
and meanwhile, Trump is like, Rocket Man.
Right. Well, because his insults are either things he's coming up with off the cuff or things that fucking Stephen Miller, C+ high school Santa Monica fascist Stephen Miller came up with for
right.
him. He's got like one writer. It's not a great, we're not winning the war of words, I would say.
No.
And yeah, it makes sense too, like that analysts are worried because suddenly like if our rhetoric's changing, then they're going to start thinking like, wait, are they about to?
Right.
Are you about to?
That's a great point. Like, the more that they think that we're unpredictable and volatile,
right.
the more it's like, well, maybe we have to do something first. Yeah.
Right. And just all other Asian nations like Japan and South Korea are like, none of them get freaked out when Kim Jong-un's talking all this shit, but they're absolutely terrified of
yeah,
Trump.
Yeah, with Trump. They're
right.
like, yeah, especially in Japan, like having to reconsider like whether or not as a country they're going like,
to have to
bolster
arm.
Their yeah, military, which.
Right.
We've been a pacifist nation since the end of World War II.
So there's a recent study that was published in the scientific journal Political Research Quarterly that is suggesting that this whole Russia story about Trump is just basically wishful thinking on the part of basically non-Trump supporters who have been unable to cope with the reality of him winning the election. And they point to, you know, all the conspiracy theories that popped up after Obama won. And, you know, there were quite a few when Bush was in office. And for a long time, people thought that George W. Bush stole that election with lawyers in Florida.
Right, right, right.
Until they actually... I remember there was a story that came out 3 or 4 years afterwards that was like, oh, actually, he really did win in Florida right, right. by like 200 votes. But yeah, I don't know. It does seem to be different in some respects. Like there's definitely seems to be evidence. Facebook is releasing evidence as we speak that seems to suggest that the Kremlin was trying to put their thumb on the scales. But it does feel like dessert a little bit talking and thinking about that.
Well, it's just, I feel like, you know, a lot of liberals have like this insane tunnel vision when it comes to Trump and Russia. Like it for some people, it's like their whole, like their reason to live is just to be like, well, when Mueller figures it all out, like this nightmare will be over. And like, sure, that could happen, but there's just as easily a chance that there might not be compelling enough information to sort of support this sort of way out narrative that people are trying to kind of come up with. And like, yeah, like you say, I think it's more of like a pendulum that just swings with power, basically. Like when you're not in power, then you get to be the people, you know, talking about whatever conspiracy theories you have. You know, because like with Obama, it was like crisis actors and like, you know, if he was an agent of Islam or something. And now like, you know, there are like a lot of left-wing crazy conspiracy theorists out there who like we don't – like not many people are sort of paying attention to, but – we have our version of Pizzagate and things like that. Well, not our, but on like if people are more left-leaning, you know, there's people like Louise Mensch.
I think we can acknowledge that we're not Trump supporters.
No, yeah.
In this room.
But like Louise Mensch, she published a story about how Andrew Breitbart was assassinated by Russian agents to make room for the rise of Steve Bannon.
Right.
Or that like Russian intelligence entrapped Anthony Weiner by creating a fake Facebook profile of a 15-year-old girl. There are bizarre stories too that sort of
There's definitely and like a lot of like research around conspiratorial thinking like definitively links it to the sense of like a loss of control, and what you need to do to cope with it is try to connect the dots and come up with all these theories and like explanations for why the thing that you don't understand is happening. So it totally makes sense that that is a thing that would like strike members of either political party.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you guys remember that, like, right after the election, there was this Medium post going around where this guy, like, I don't know if he's done anything other than that Medium post, but he was basically like, oh, the travel ban is, like, purposely being rolled out in, like, a bumbling way because it's, like, a trial balloon for a coup, like, I guess, like, Bannon. I don't remember exactly what it was. It was just basically, like... And like a bunch of my friends were like sharing it around, and it was just like, okay, like we gotta all like calm down. Cause it's also like the more that you focus on like the crazy conspiracy stuff, the more that you're gonna miss the stuff that's legit and that we actually need to focus on.
Right.
And I think like Russia is like a great example. Like there's probably, I mean, clearly we're seeing that there are a lot of connections, and it seems like there was definitely some collusion there. But it's, how much of the real stuff are we missing by like, going after like the crazy and most like salacious rumors.
Right.
All I know is once Trump is impeached and Mike Pence takes over, all our problems will be solved.
Cause, yeah, right.
Because that guy seems super chill and like he has some really progressive ideas.
Yeah. Well, he and his wife, mother, will.
Yeah. Mother
will lead the country.
So fucking creepy. All right, we're gonna go to a break real quick, and when we come back, we're gonna have Taylor Ortega, one of our writers, who has a really interesting observation about pop culture that makes some of your favorite teen dramas feel a little creepy. All right, and we're back. We are joined by Allison Zeidman, and we have Taylor Ortega. What's
Hello.
Up, Taylor? Hi, how are you?
Hi.
All
Hi,
right.
Allison.
Hey, Taylor. I didn't realize it was this Taylor. I know Taylor.
I know Allison.
I'm also here. I'm Miles.
Oh, sorry, Miles.
No, that's fine. I'm just going to sit in the corner.
Taylor and I just need to catch up for a second. It's been a minute.
Yeah, Miles, what did I say about talking on
you're right,
on mic?
You're right.
Wait, you guys know each other?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
we used to, I won't say work, I'd say, I guess, volunteer on a show at the Pit in New York, a theater there.
Oh, okay. Nice. Yeah. Well, Taylor, you noticed something about movies and TV that you wanted to talk to us about.
Yeah. I have noticed a fun trend. I don't know if I'd call it a fun trend of a legitimate romantic storyline in teen dramas being student-teacher, like inappropriate student-teacher relationships. And I don't so much mean inappropriate student-teacher relationships in terms of like on How to Get Away with Murder, where she helps them all murder. That's not great. I don't think that's like setting a great precedent, but I'm more talking about like sexual relationships between students and teachers in teen dramas treated as legitimate romantic storylines that are kind of creepy and gross.
Yeah, and there is a lot of that, isn't there?
There's like so much, and it's still, I think it's only gotten like worse, even as TV has gotten more progressive and dealt with like more real issues. That one thing continues to just get like pornier for some reason. but I have, I wanted to kick it off with like a fun guessing game that everyone can enjoy and be involved in.
Yes.
And I have a couple instances of summaries of just times where this has been a plot line on a teen drama, a show intended for young people, and real life instances of statutory situations. And you can go ahead and tell me what you think, whether you think it's real or a plot line.
Do we get extra points if we can name the show or movie that it's from?
Yes, please do.
Or the teacher's real names.
Yeah, the real life teachers.
I'm more of a fan on that end.
You've got trading cards.
Mary Kay Letourneau. That's the only one I really know.
Yes,
I will.
Star.
I will be shouting out points during this game. Just
although
Chris Hardwick,
just sidebar, so people used to make fun of me. They said I look like the boy that was with Mary Kay Letourneau.
Oh, you kind
really
of.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my connection to the story.
It's my way.
Very personal for me.
Yeah, very personal for me. All right, let's do this.
Okay, cool. Okay, so the first one is this high school teacher had an ongoing sexual relationship with her 16-year-old music student. The pair were discovered after accidentally witnessing part of a local murder.
Oh, this is so easy. It's Riverdale.
It is! It's Riverdale!
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
It's so easy if you watch the show
religiously. Yeah, I was like, yeah.
If you're like a big fan of teen dramas when you're almost 30.
Which I am both of those things. So.
All right, so point for you there.
I mean, I knew that, but I didn't want to say anything. Go ahead.
You can share my points if
okay,
you want.
Okay, cool.
This one is, this former model turned high school English teacher met his student on an online dating site. The pair engaged in a sexual relationship before he discovered she was underage, but continued seeing each other until the teacher cheated on his student.
Okay, that sounds pretty sleazy. I think I'm going to go with real life on that one.
Yeah, I think that sounds about real to me.
Right, me too, yeah. It's too crazy to be fake.
It is a plot line from One Tree Hill.
Oh, what?
Wow.
Yo, jokingly, I was just going to say One Tree Hill because I realize like so many of the CW shows have this as like one of their main like sort of story points, but oh, damn.
That is like
contract for creating. They're like, we can't air it until there's a student-teacher relationship.
Right. Or like every pilot has it written into it. So that's a CW who's like, yeah, we like this show.
I guess I should have known that reality is less fond of the case of mistaken identity dating thing than
I think it's what they use to make it kind of okay, but
Right.
Okay, this high school media services director had a sexual relationship with a 15-year-old student and convinced him to murder her husband, then ended up going to prison for life.
Real? I'm going to go real again.
I'm going to say real, too, just because it's a media services director.
Yeah, that seems
and I feel like any TV show would be like, teacher, everyone in a school is a teacher.
Right.
That's not in the wheelhouse of many writers. You're like, media services director. So yeah, that's real, right?
Yes, it's a real one. It's Pamela Smart, but Nicole Kidman did play her in a movie eventually.
Oh.
Wow.
To Die For.
Yes, To Die For.
Yeah.
Someone knows their stuff. No, they're gross.
Before he started talking to you, Jack was like going through other films that he thought fit this too. And I was like, wow, you know a lot. You got a
That's the thing. I limited these to only teen dramas, but it occurs in a lot of other kinds of media. Okay, I'll do two more. This 49-year-old elementary school teacher engaged in oral sex with a 14-year-old student to prevent him from having sex with his girlfriend, who is also coincidentally his goddaughter.
What?
She was charged with three class two felony counts of sexual conduct with a minor.
That's real.
I just got so confused there. So the teacher engaged in oral sex with the male student to keep male student from having sex with his girlfriend, who was also his goddaughter?
Yes.
So he didn't want this student having sex with his goddaughter, so he performed oral sex on him?
No, the teacher's a woman, right?
Yes, the teacher's a woman.
And
was she jealous?
And the student and the student's girlfriend is
her goddaughter?
Is his goddaughter? Is the student's goddaughter?
Maybe it's her goddaughter. I'm so confused.
That would make more sense.
More sense.
Either way, I know this one. It's Godfather 3. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I wish. It's just a thing that happened in Florida.
Aha.
I know. And this last one is maybe my favorite of all.
My favorite statutory rape.
My fave statch.
The new podcast.
As the kids call it.
Yeah.
My statch vlog. This high school English teacher had a short-term sexual relationship with a local minor and a long-term romantic relationship and sexual relationship with another minor, this time a student in one of his classes. Upon learning his student and her friends were being blackmailed by a homicidal stalker, he poses as their tormentor in an effort to gather material for his true crime novel. Eventually, the student and teacher wed.
Oh, this is Pretty Little Liars.
Yes, it is. It's the most insane thing I've ever
Flat
seen.
Out. Fuck with me. Yes, I knew that one.
Did you watch Pretty Little Liars, or was that in like one of your listicles?
No, that's actually passively from my girlfriend who loves it. And I remember seeing this. I'm like, yo, this is fucked up. I'm like, how are you watching this? Like, this is like the least woke entertainment ever. She's like, it's fun.
Wait, so the teacher was like a serial pedophile? Was he treated as such?
No, their relationship was treated as like a real romance. They were like the long-term committed lovers of the entire series.
Right. And I remember,
people were like rooting for them to like be together.
Right.
Well, it's just weird that the whole thing was like, yeah, sorry, I was just doing research for my crime novel.
Right.
And then it's like, what? Like, I remember that was like, that's how he's ending this weird relationship.
Oh, he was dating his student to get information on the student that died?
No, he was dating her. He was dating her because he loved her. But then
here's
my thing. Even if someone is not your like, say you have a normal boyfriend-girlfriend relationship and you're the same age and it's not statutory rape, the point where he finds out that I am being stalked by a murderer and does anything but alert the authorities, much less then poses as the murderer to see like what kind of good like true crime gems he can scoop out of this is like the end. That'd be the end for me. I feel like that's just my boundary.
That's
though.
Your red line. Yeah.
Well, I guess you don't support the arts, Taylor.
Yeah, right.
Trying to write a novel.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were looking earlier, and this happens in basically every CW drama, right? Like it happened twice in Gossip Girl.
Yeah, it happened twice in Gossip Girl. Although I think only once in. Oh no, you're right. Twice while they were in high school, and Gossip happens to Blair. I mean, it happens to Serena, and it happens to Dan.
Nice.
Yeah,
so well done,
old Gossip Girl expert Jack O'Brien over here. He was schooling us on that.
Big fan,
Taylor. I'm curious. Did you come across any examples where it's not treated as like a romantic storyline, like any examples where like in Riverdale, I was kind of struck by like there is a moment where the parents find out and they're like, you know, they're appalled, but I felt like not appalled enough. They're just like, well, teacher, this teacher has to leave Riverdale and never come back. Well, like that's it.
As opposed to
pressing charges or like, you know,
getting the authorities involved.
Right.
I looked into it. There's an episode of a show called The Fosters where they find out that the teenage son, I guess, is involved with, I don't know if it's a teacher. I think it's like an older, like, girlfriend of the father or something. And at first it's like, it's like a lesson in gender, because at first the father is mad at his son or his stepson or whatever, and then they're like, if this was a girl, you'd treat it differently. And he's like, you know what, you're right, you're out of my life, Sharon, or whatever the woman's name is who had sex with a minor. But so that's like the only instance I found in researching, like, particularly Riverdale, which is so Riverdale to me, it's weird because it came out last year, and it's the, I feel like Pretty Little Liars is really bad, but Riverdale is so, like, because Riverdale, so much of Riverdale is just the beginning of porn. That's like what that show is. It's just like the first 2 minutes of different overproduced porn videos strung together into a teen
drama.
Yeah,
a lot of pizza deliveries on that show.
A lot of see me after class.
But a lot that this is kind of like a weirdly tone deaf relationship for its time. And she's off right. the show now, but it was a weird storyline. Also because in the comics, Miss Grundy is like really old.
Yeah, Miss Grundy's not hot at all.
Oh,
but,
really?
I mean, is Archie really supposed to be that hot either? I mean,
he is. I think he's supposed to be like, woo.
yeah, in the comic books.
It's become very CW-ified, everybody's.
Yeah. But I mean, this is like a porn trope, right? It's like the pizza delivery guy, and then right. also there's like teacher student relationships. Like those are sort of mainstream, well known porn tropes. And yeah, it seems, I feel like this is crazy because it's a bigger problem in reality than I think even we realize. Because I feel like all the times that I knew it was happening, like when I was a high school student, like the teacher didn't end up getting caught and like turned into like a national news story. It's just like, even when the parents did find out, they didn't want to ruin their daughter's life, or, you know, as they thought, ruin their daughter's life. So they just kept it quiet, but like told the guy to go find a different job. And now he's, I checked on this guy, and like now he's like a teacher at a different school. It's like, great.
Oh, that's so bad.
It's like the same as the clergy, basically.
Right.
It's like, can't be at this church anymore.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I read a really crazy article about the Jerry Sandusky thing, but the Penn State child abuser. And they like talked about how these people who are predators, they just have, their whole life is basically built around them getting access to whatever their prey of choice is. Mm. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's why it's so common, is that a lot of people choose their profession maybe specifically to gain access to kids. Oof. So, yeah, the fact that it's normalized, that's something that teen dramas really need to
check
to
that.
Look at yourself in the mirror, CW.
Right. It's also just kind of interesting, like, whose fantasy is being fulfilled in these teen dramas? Because, like, are these, like, are the writers imagining that, like, this is something that, like, the high school kids watching the show want and are interested in? Or is it like more
that's
like
a really
right
point?
Or is it the writers?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
is it their
yes.
thing? Like, you know,
well,
yeah.
It's weird because in, I think, like, there's different ways to go about it, but with, especially with the Riverdale storyline, it was weird because they kind of, you're right, like the parents were like, what the hell? You can't fuck my kid. And then.
Well, wait a second.
They're Archie's.
I thought you were giving him music lessons, but you're giving him music lessons and fucking? Well, one of those has to stop.
She's like, I can't give you music lessons anymore because of our history. And it's like, bitch, you're a music teacher. You're not even doing your job at this point. Like, now you're fucking the kids and you're not even teaching them music. That's crazy. Like, you have to at least teach them music if you're going to do that. And she doesn't. And then it's kind of spirals into this thing where the kids investigate her on their own, as children in television often do because they're so such good detectives.
Or because the legal system failed them.
Right.
They did. Well, yeah, consistently does in these small towns that are made up. And they find a gun in her
And
car.
I would have gotten away with raping Archie if it weren't for those pesky kids
those
and
pesky
their dog.
Kids, right.
They're Jesus. So good. They stole my gun, and they did. And then she like manipulates him emotionally. They like they have this weird storyline where she's like, "Well, I was abused, so now all the teenagers watching it are like, oh, see, she's a victim, so it's okay if she fucks these kids." I don't know. Like it seems like they went out and they like legitimized her very weird behavior of driving around with a gun in her car and picking up local teens for sex.
Yeah, just on paper, that's just the worst look ever.
Yeah.
I, they read it and they were like, I don't know, this is sexy good. And I think that we should.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I was just thinking about this today and realized that a movie I really love, Election, like it has a student teacher relationship and the student is kind of considered like the bad person in it, like the Reese Witherspoon character, right. Like, because then she goes on to like have a relationship with a politician, so it's almost like she's the aggressor or
the
something
whole time.
Like that.
Yeah, right.
It's
right,
like,
right,
no,
right.
That's a case of pedophilia. Like, right. That's weird. That,
come on, Alexander Payne.
Right.
In these scenarios, too, I mean, in these shows, the kids are always as smart as their teachers, and then the teachers are also always as beautiful as the students, which, like, that give and take never happens either. It's so rare. Like, even the hottest teacher at your high school is like hot for a high school teacher.
Yeah, right.
This poor woman too, the rest of Riverdale, they dress these kids to be like, you know, like amazing Instagram versions of teenagers, and this poor woman who plays this kid fucker teacher, they put her in like hot teacher clothes they found outside of whatever warehouse they filmed their last Pornhub teacher video. They don't try at all. They give her these big crazy glasses. It's so lazy and weird and uncomfortable.
Is there ever like one of those obligatory moments where her hair is up and then she has to take it down and like
take the pencil out of her hair?
I feel like
there is one scene where she just takes off her glasses in so many steps. There's so many steps to it that it makes me angry. I made a GIF of it. It makes me so mad. I watched it. I repeated it. I was watching it with other people and I rewound it a bunch of times and I was like, this is terrible. Why is this so? And like so much of her plotline is really devoted to her just being like, I wear glasses, I guess, but I guess I'm hot under them, I guess.
Wait, how do you take your glasses off in more than just the first step of removing them from your face?
Let me see how long I can like stretch this out. Okay, so
that's still one
arm.
Oh, right.
Two arms.
The folding.
And then like, yeah. I don't know. I think get your case out. Yeah, get the case out.
I thought she had
they're a little dirty. I better clean them off.
Right. I thought she had one of those straps behind that like PE teachers have on their sunglasses. Like, let me undo the strap first and then I can take these off.
I was thinking about, and speaking of like movies that I realized like, oh yeah, I really love this movie. And then thinking about it, it's an example of this exact thing that we're talking about. Never Been Kissed with Drew Barrymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I used to love that movie. And then I was just like refreshing my memory of the plot, before we got started here. And it's like, oh yeah.
Right. He falls in love with a student.
He falls in love with a student. And then at the end, like her big article is like, I'm so sorry for deceiving everyone, but, you know, I am in love with you, teacher guy, and meet me on this baseball field and, like, kiss me and, like, we'll start our lives together or whatever. So it's, like, basically, like, outing him as a teacher that was interested in a student.
Right.
And then he shows up, so it's like, yep, it was me. I totally wanted to fuck this person who I thought was a 17-year-old. And then I got mad when I found out she wasn't 17. Yeah, she deceived me.
Right. How dare
it's
you?
It's like, wait, so you wanted her to be 17? Like, that's very problematic.
No,
you're in love with her?
It's very...
That's the insane part, that he gets angry when he's like, you're an adult? That's disgusting.
Right. How yeah.
It's kind of funny because, I mean, there's no shortage in the news, right? If you search, like, in Google, you put news and you put teacher student relationship, there's no shortage of this thing happening over and over and over again. And it seems like now, like, you're seeing actually more women like having to answer to justice for this. But if you just search a regular Google search like a teacher student relationship, you just get listicles of like the hottest student teacher relationships from film and TV. So it's like, it's odd that even like in the context of this being so prevalent, like in the media, that there's like, there are not many people talking about like, yo, what are we teaching kids right now?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I mean, when you look at the real examples, like Taylor said, like the teachers are, you know, 45-year-old ugly people who you can tell like somehow like forced this kid into a relationship that they like definitely weren't interested in. So not that it's cool if the teacher's hot, but it's still like, I don't know, like they just glamorize it in a way that's like unrealistic.
Yeah, they glamorize it. And then I think they also like often these storylines, you know, I'm sure in real life, too, sometimes it's like, you know, it blurs the line of like consent and, you know, there are different ages of consent in different states and that kind of thing. And it's kind of, you know, I'm sure there are some students who, you know, maybe think that they're consenting, but it's like, no, you're a teenager, you don't know what's going on.
Right.
But yeah, consistently in the pop culture examples, it's very much like, this is our torrid love affair and, you know, we're on equal footing here. It does not highlight the power dynamic that's in place there at all.
Right.
And, you know, that's like so, it's just so much more subtle sometimes.
Yeah. We're basically out of time. But Taylor, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter at Taylor_Ortega. I love underscores. and also on Instagram at Carbra_Streisand.
Nice.
I mostly just post pictures of myself.
It's great. Taylor has a great Instagram.
I'm curious what I look like. That's the place.
All right. All right, Carbra Streisand, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, bye.
Later.
And we're back. And we wanted to take a little while. Allison, you were pointing out in our pitch doc that as a country, America is just bad at being prepared for bad stuff to happen just in general.
Yeah, pretty much anything. Yeah. I mean, I was just like, so I was reading about Mexico, like in the context of like the two earthquakes that they just had, how they have like a warning system throughout the country that alerts people. And, you know, sometimes you can only find out like 15 seconds before it's going to happen or whatever. But that is like enough time to save more lives than you would if you didn't have something like that at all. And California is in the process of getting that off the ground, but not really. And like maybe there will be federal funding, but probably not because it's Trump. And, you know, the expert that was talking about it was kind of saying that it's like, yeah, because we haven't had a major disaster like that. Like if something bad happens, then we'll be like, oh, shit, we should spend the money to make sure that something like this doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
But it'll like it's like we don't think ahead until it happens. And it just made me start thinking about, you know, like the conversations that we're having in the country right now about healthcare and insurance and kind of like, yeah, everybody needs insurance. Like the society will be better in the long run if we all have insurance. Climate, you know, it applies to climate change. It applies to like how retirement and Social Security are handled in this country, where it's just sort of like, no, everybody's going to be fine. You're all just going to like save your money. And then it's like all these factors of like, just, you know, saying like, oh, we're not going to worry about it, or like, oh, it's on the individual to like take care of themselves. Eventually it blows up into this like big systemic problem that's too big for society, for like the government and our society to even correct for.
Yeah. You can't privatize disaster relief because there's not a demand for disaster relief until there's a fucking disaster. So you like will never be prepared for disasters. Like that's what was so crazy about Trump going from Houston, you know, after that hurricane.
Harvey?
Yeah, that's the one.
I know, sadly, there have been so fucking many. Yeah. H, we're already at M right now.
I know.
Like, wow.
But after Harvey, he was like touring the relief efforts, the extreme outskirts, not seeing any victims. And then he went.
That would be gross.
Right. Then he went and like gave a speech about like tax reform, and that was essentially going to like cut all taxes. It's like, where do you think the relief efforts come from? The Mexican people didn't demand a early warning system. Like their government was like, well, shit, we should probably do this because, you know, like, because
it'll help our people.
Yeah. Right. I think for them, it might have been in response to like a big earthquake in the 80s too, but it's just, So it's like, I'm kind of trying to. And I think about, like, is this a problem that's particular to the U.S. or is this just human nature that we, you know, which just you deal with things that are right in front of you, and anything that's like hypothetical or in the future, your brain's just like, it'll be fine.
Right.
I mean, it's the way the philosophy of the U.S. in handling stuff like that is very similar to like when I had like a really shitty car. Mechanics were like, you probably want to replace this stuff soon. And
like
my whole thing was
tires.
Like, I'll do it when it's a problem.
Right. It's like, no, it's a problem now.
Yeah, I'm like, no, my shit still goes. So I think we're good. And I think it's like that same mentality of like, nah, it doesn't feel like a problem yet. And it's so reactive that, it's too late. And we were talking, even with hurricane relief, for every dollar that would have been spent in preparedness amounts to 15 on like the back end for like relief response.
Right.
So like $1 billion in investment is the equivalent of $15 billion in relief efforts. So like just off the math, I don't understand why we're not getting more aggressive.
From a purely rational perspective, it makes sense. But the human mind was not designed to, like, computers are designed to be purely rational, but the human mind was designed back at a time when we were, you know, still running from animals and, right. you know, trying to remember which tree gave us the fruit that didn't poison us. And so, like, it was just all about what we saw in front of us at that moment. And I think it's partially that. There's also this sort of absurd sounding theory that has some pretty compelling evidence that the English language is specifically bad at conveying the concept of the future. And basically, because we have a future tense, we're able to think of the future as a completely separate thing that we don't have access to. And like, that's never going to bother us.
Right.
Essentially. Whereas there are a lot of languages where, the future tense is actually the same as the present tense. And people who speak those languages as a first language have been shown to be better at saving, less likely to smoke, better at doing things that prepare for the future because they see the present and the future as like a single continuum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's interesting about that study is that they also even looked at people that speak different languages but that live in the same country, like to rule out that it wouldn't just be sort of like a cultural phenomenon or like a cultural attitude. And they were even seeing the discrepancies there. And, you know, people like were rightfully like, well, this sounds like bullshit, and like double check the guy's work. And it was like, whoa, he's right. yeah, it's pretty crazy stuff.
I was just thinking, because I was curious of what languages don't have future tense and present tense. So like those are like Chinese, German, Japanese, Norwegian.
Right.
And then ones that do have a future or separate future tense, English, Arabic, Greek, and the Romance languages. So that makes sense. I think the people in that second category are dealing with far less, like, especially, well, at least some economic crises, Japan slightly, but definitely good at saving for the future. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't it Norway?
I think we can generalize about right. entire nations of people.
But like Norway or Finland, they just hit like $1 trillion in savings or something.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Like it's something crazy. So that makes so much sense even in terms of this, like mm-hmm. that they have like their like social security fund is like that much.
Yeah. So I think those types of things are kind of stacked against us as a country, like in terms of like just how the human brain works. The language thing does sound pretty compelling.
So many force multipliers that are just, yeah.
Right. But then I think also there, because, you know, there, I think other countries have a better sense or just prioritize more the sense of like community and the greater good of, you know, taking care of one another. And this country is so much about, you know, the individual and freedom. And it's like, too much freedom isn't good sometimes.
Yeah,
like
no,
when,
right.
when things aren't systematized or not regulated, then it's like, you know, in the short term, maybe you feel like you've got it under control, but then there's no safety net.
Yeah. When you go back and look at like the histories of great companies in America, like a lot of them are the stories of like 10, 15 people coming together and, you know, like all being this like great team that offsets one another, but eventually one person will become the focus of the media and like they'll write a tell-all book that's like, I like stepped to the forefront. And it's like that we just want to believe in the story of the individual so much that we actually lie to ourselves about how things work.
Mm-hmm.
And wow.
I think that's also why like the NBA is sort of the ascendant sport, is because it's the one sport where an individual can actually like carry the team on their
turn
back.
Turn a game on its
right.
head. Right.
Whereas like football is still, you know, player one player won't be good like one year to the next, just depending on the scheme that they're working mm-hmm. within.
Why do you guys think that? So I'm just, you know, this is just us like editorializing and speculating now, but like, why do you think that sense of the importance of individual freedoms has persisted in America? Because I feel like the experiments that this country has, like, I'll call them experiments with like, more, you know, social services type programs like Social Security, for example, and like Medicaid. It's like once they're in place, everybody's like, oh, these are good. And then like once, you know, then when Republicans are trying to take them away,
right.
everybody's like, you can't do this. Why are we still fighting against these type of things, do you think? Or not we as in this room, but, you know,
well,
as culture, you're fighting.
I think the fact that America is sort of the self-fulfilling thing where we make the only culture that we pay attention to.
Mm.
And that culture will lie to you and tell you that that's how the world works, that it's like all individuals and like these sort of, and it's just a very attractive way to look at things.
Yeah.
It's just a fun sort of wish fulfillment way of thinking about things. And like, it's also the narratively best way to like tell a story is with one individual hero. And that is sort of what America is all about.
Right. And
just interesting that it's gone past being like aspirational and more kind of like, no, this is the way it is. If you just work hard enough,
it's just you.
Right.
And I think that's how you can, I think that's how some people can rationalize like things like healthcare. Where it's like, well, it's all on you. There's if there was a true sense of community, then there would be more of, I think, a feeling of responsibility on the part of politicians to say like, oh, let's take care of our people.
Yeah.
Like this is a community. Rather than like, oh, well, I'm fine.
Yeah.
And
the more the more wealth disparity that there is, I'm sure like it's just getting worse because it's like you're further distancing yourself from other people and there's less and less empathy. Yeah. Everything's just a mess. I think
we are so fucked. You
guys. In summation, we're fucked. Yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah.
Maybe. Happy Monday.
Yeah. Sorry to come on and be a bummer.
No. But I think that's... Those are all really interesting reasons that we're fucked. Californians in particular, read about the Cascadia earthquake. That's Northern Californians and Oregonians and Washingtonians should all read about the Cascadia earthquake. That is the really big one that's going to happen in the next 100 years in terms of earthquakes that we just kind of found out about in the last 15 years that is going to take out Portland. If Portland doesn't actually change how it's prepared, it's going to be insane. But yeah, nobody's preparing for it because it hasn't happened yet.
Right. But you're saying it's like
it's inevitable. Like,
and it's set up to be one of the most catastrophic earthquakes in recorded history.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah. The last one that happened was like 250 years ago when that part of the country wasn't settled, and there are legends about it, and like there are entire dead forests on this part of the world. And then over in Japan, they had this thing called the ghost wave because a tsunami came out of nowhere and like destroyed a bunch of places in Japan. And they only recently figured out that it was the earthquake off the coast of America that sent a tsunami all the way across the Pacific. That's how powerful it was. But yeah, it's basically set up to be really, really bad for the Pacific Northwest if they don't. Like, there are schools in Oregon that are like within the tsunami zone that they just haven't like moved since figuring this out because it's
not a problem yet.
Not a problem.
Yeah. School's here now. I don't see
any waves.
Yeah.
You see a wave?
You see a wave? Look right now.
By the way,
hey, believe me, if there were waves, I'd be catching them.
So I monitor the Drudge Report, which is to say that like I go to the Drudge Report like every day because it's just like this this guy screaming at the top of his lungs about like, you know, the news stories. But he has this consistent theme in his headlines where he will always point out any like cold snap that is happening. Like it just snowed in California and he was like, snow in winter, and like showed a picture of, you know, it was up in the mountains of the Sierra Madres. And, but like he just, it's like his way of being like, see, global warming. Yeah, right.
But then what does he do with stories when it's like the hottest fucking summer ever?
Right.
Like
he does not print those.
Well,
yeah. It's so funny how like, because like global warming like became the buzzword. Like that's what we said before everybody started saying climate change, and that's like still such an argument for people that they're like, well, but like, how do you explain when it gets cold? It's just like, okay,
the whole globe isn't
we weren't
warming.
Using like the best term to encompass all the different types of climate change.
Also, warming sounds so gentle.
Yeah. Like,
it's just like,
it's a warm hug from the universe.
Right. All right. We're just about out of time. Allison, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Allison L. Zeidman. That's one L in the Allison, and the other one's in my middle name.
One Zides in the Zeidman.
One Zides in the Zeidman, yeah.
Z-E-I-D, right?
Yeah.
Cool.
He can
spell. I before E,
except after Zeidman.
Zeidman.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me.
It was awesome. It was a lot
of fun.
Back.
I would love to.
Miles, where can people find you?
North Hollywood.
Go to his house. Holler Miles' address is
North Hollywood 91602. Holler at my mom.
You're like, I'm not gonna give out my address, but
just
I'll give out
my mom. Just doxed my mom,
man. Jesus. All right, you can follow me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter, and yeah, hope you have a good Monday. We'll be back tomorrow.
Have a blessed Monday.